Washington hasn't sold any advanced arms to former Soviet bloc states, but it signed cooperation agreements with several of them. I'm Korva Coleman in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Of the many loves of Dobie Gillis, the girl who loved him the most and the longest was Zelda Gilroy. She was brainy and aggressive, but she wasn't the dreamboat Dobie was looking for. Actress Sheila James Kuehl played Zelda from 1959 to 63. Her acting career ended shortly after the Dobie Gillis show. Now she believes no one wanted to hire her because of rumors she was a lesbian. Well, the rumors were true. When the work stopped, she went back to school, became a feminist, studied law, and put the two together. She's directed the California Women's Law Center and taught classes on gender and the law at several universities. Last November, she became the first openly gay or lesbian person to be elected to the California State Assembly. Sheila James Kuehl started acting when she was 9 and got the part of Zelda when she was 18. In 1992, I asked her what she thought of Zelda.
I loved her. I still think of her as sort of my little sister. It's interesting because once the women's movements sort of came to blossom in the 70s, I started getting a lot of letters from women who were coming to consciousness as feminists telling me that they now remembered Zelda very fondly because she was the only girl on television in all those times in the early 60s who had a brain. I mean, she not only had a brain, but she was smarter than everyone in the world, who was aggressive, who knew what she wanted, went and got it. She was going to go to medical school. Of course, on the other hand, she really thought it was Dobie who ought to be president of the United States, and her main aspiration was to marry him. And interestingly enough, in the reunion movies, in the first reunion movie, Zelda was in law school. In the second reunion movie, she was working in the grocery store married to Dobie. So it's just a difference, I think, between the late 70s and late 80s, just in terms of how the movie was written. And it's sort of relationship history that kind of reflects culture, I think.
Do you have a favorite Dobie episode?
I do. It was called Dobie, Dobie, Who's Got the Dobie? And it was really about Zelda being totally heartsick because Dobie won't have anything to do with her, which, of course, was the theme of their entire relationship. And he was chasing another woman. And at some point, Zelda places herself in the soda shop within full view of Dobie and this new woman, and she's wearing widow's attire, you know, black from head to foot with a veil over her face, and she's sobbing uncontrollably at this table. And Dobie comes over and he says, Zelda, you know, you're breaking my heart, you're ruining my romance. I need you to do something for me, and if you really, really love me, you will. And Zelda says, anything, poopsie, I'll do anything for you. And he says, smile. And she says, smile? He says, smile. So I started smiling, and he keeps saying, wider, wider, wider. And finally, she's got this huge grin that goes from ear to ear, which is not in her eyes. You know what I mean? This hideous grin. And she says, I'm cracking my face. And he says, now laugh. And so she starts laughing, and I built up this maniacal laugh that went for almost a minute and a half that just built up to, you know, this peak. And then she pulls out a bottle of poison and drinks it. And the show itself it has wonderful feeling to it. And I don't know, it's my favorite. I think it was the best work I ever did.
It's very difficult for young people to grow up on camera, which you did. But it might have been especially difficult to grow up on camera and start realizing, maybe I'm a lesbian. Because this was at a period when it was pretty socially unacceptable. There wasn't much of a gay rights movement, not much in terms of support. So did you start going through this kind of inner questioning in the period when you were in front of the camera?
Terry, you're the mistress of understatement. You say there wasn't much of a movement, and it was sort of like not too cool to be queer. Yes, it was very, like, if you count losing your career, losing your family, losing the people in your religion, being fired from whatever you're doing, yeah, it was totally uncool.
Did you lose all that?
Yeah. I don't miss any of that, actually. It's the closet was just awful. I'll tell you, it was totally frightening. It was terrifying. First of all, I had no context in which to put the fact that I was falling in love with a woman. I thought it was so bizarre and so strange and so unnatural, and yet it felt so right that I simply kept the relationship, of course, extremely, extremely, extremely secret from my parents, from everybody, never told a friend, I mean, for years. And in the third year that we were doing Dobie, Zelda was getting a lot of fan mail, and Max Schulman, and everyone loved her character. So Max wrote a pilot, a spin-off pilot, in which I would star, that featured Zelda as the lead character. And we made the pilot for the series, and CBS was extremely high on the series. And all of a sudden, the pilot just dropped like a stone, and nobody talked about it anymore. And finally, the director had the courage and compassion, I think, to take me aside and ask if we could go for a walk, and told me that there was this rumor that, well, that I was, well, you know, not straight, essentially. And it was just a rumor, and no one knew where it came from, but it was enough to get CBS to completely scotch the pilot, and I only did 4 shows the next year in Dobie, and that was it. So the homophobia in the industry, which of course only reflects how strong it is outside the industry, has devastated, I think, some careers. And to tell you the truth, I never even thought about it that much myself. I mean, people would say, well, why did you leave show business? And I would make some, you know, weak joke about how, well, you don't leave show business. The phone just stops ringing, and that's what happened to me. And but it was homophobia.
What word did the... who'd you say it was, the director who took you aside?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What word did he use for lesbian when he was talking with you? Do you remember?
Well, I think that he said, they think you're just too butch. Which, of course, is a great joke now, I think.
Well, I'm sure the irony wasn't lost on you that, you know, here you were in love with a woman and playing on TV this woman who is just addicted to Dobie Gillis.
Well, it may seem funny now, but I don't see it really. The more important, interesting thing to me, I think, was the fact that she was the strongest female character on television.
Mm-hmm.
She was capable and competent and smart, but her whole idea was she wanted to marry him and have him be successful. And what Max, I think, realized was this is not what Dobie wanted either. He wanted to be a poet. He didn't care about money. He didn't care about success. And so everybody was after something that was totally wrong for their lives in a way, which made them all losers.
Was do you know if anybody like gossiped about you on the set or was overtly malicious? And of course it was malicious to kind of basically throw you out of the industry, but I mean just on a more...
No, I know that no one did.
Uh-huh.
Dwayne didn't know. Bob Denver didn't know. It was a total secret. I mean, no one even thought about it very much in those days.
You said before that, you know, through coming out, you lost your family and your religion.
No. I said that you could.
But you personally didn't.
No. No. Actually, but I didn't come out to my parents for 20 years after that.
It's a long time.
A long time. And, of course, my mother, bless her heart, looked at me with this sort of sad, understanding, wise look and said, oh, honey, we always knew you liked girls better.
Really?
Yeah.
On this archive edition of Fresh Air, we're featuring a 1992 interview with Sheila James Kuehl, who played Zelda Gilroy on the Dobie Gillis Show. Back after a break, this is Fresh Air.
And you're listening to Fresh Air with Terry Gross on KPFT 90.1 in Houston. Coming up at 4 o'clock is the BBC News Hour, followed by the BBC News Desk at 5 o'clock, and Pacifica Network News at 5:30, with a brief look at the Houston Metropolitan Forecast.
When your acting career was ended, were you angry or disappointed? What did you feel at the time?
I think I was just mostly really sad and really scared about how I was going to earn my living. I didn't feel I had any skills that would help me earn a living. I didn't even know how smart I was. And I went back to UCLA, which is where I had graduated while I was working on Dobie in the year after, and just begged them basically for a job. I had been in the student government and loved, we weren't activists yet in that generation, but I loved that stuff, and was fortunate enough to be hired working with students at UCLA, which is what eventually led to my going to law school.
How do you think you ended up becoming an activist as opposed to being a kind of bitter, injured person? You know what I mean? A lot of people who have
the
kind of
experience... You don't think I'm a bitter, injured person, huh?
No, a lot of people who have the kind of experience you had would perhaps never recover from it.
I don't know. I think some kind of genetic makeup that goes to humor. I'm not really sure. Every time something happens, it's devastating. I feel absolutely devastated, but it also sort of strikes me funny in a way. The sort of cosmic joke. I don't know whether I'm so evolved or what. But I guess the probably the best answer to your question is that my parents made me feel very secure, and a lot of people's parents don't. They just loved the hell out of me. And they never actually made me feel insecure by, you know, that they were critical or they thought I was going to get a swelled head. It was just fine with them if I got a swelled head when I was a kid. They thought I was terrific. And it made me feel growing up as though the most important place in my universe for confidence was really inside myself. And it really helps you bounce back from a lot of stuff.
Tell me how you started becoming involved with feminist issues and started to see yourself as a feminist.
Well, in the 70s, I was working, in the early 70s, when I went to work at UCLA, I was working in an office that advises student organizations, and I was given to advise the SDS, the Progressive Labor Party, the Women's Liberation Front, the Black Student Union, and the fledgling Chicano students, because there were no people of color in my office, of course, and they didn't want very much advice, but they started sort of rolling around to my apartment late at night just to talk strategy. You know, what can I do and not get arrested? And then I would say half the point is to get arrested. And we started getting in touch in the office and in other student services offices with the fact that women students were not really getting all the services they need. Housing, psychological, medical, whatever the non-academic services were. So we called a meeting, those of us who were sort of in middle management in these student services, to talk about what women might need in these services. And it was exactly the same day as the day that I found out that I had not gotten a promotion in my office, and that a man who was hired later than I was promoted instead. And I basically got in touch with the fact that I really felt screwed over by not getting this promotion, and that I was starting to see in this, what Ms. used to call a click, I had a click. And the click was, I didn't get this promotion because I'm a woman. And I found out later that the man who denied my promotion had said, she's just too aggressive, which of course he did not say about the man that got the promotion. And at that point, I got really mad. And when I get mad, I get going. I have a lot of energy. So I organized a group of women to open a women's resource center at UCLA, and I'm proud to say I am the mother of the women's resource center there. And we opened it against the chancellor's orders. I almost got fired, but we did it. And we had the first women's week, I think it was 20 years ago now. It was a very exciting time, and before I knew it, I was a feminist.
Were you out then?
No, I was not out. As a matter of fact, I was going through a straight phase at that time.
Uh-huh.
I don't mean this in any funny way, but since my first lover of my whole life was a woman and it was a long-term relationship, I was curious. And I didn't sleep with any men until I was, 29 or 30. And then I decided, well, maybe I have to see what this is all about. And so I slept with a whole bunch of them. All my friends, though, no strangers, okay? And it was a wonderful time in my life.
Do you ever have the urge to act anymore?
Well, sometimes I do, mostly when I wonder how I'm going to pay the house insurance, you know, things like that. But then every 10 years we've done a reunion movie, and both times we've done them, it has come back to me very strongly that I'm really, really, really glad that I'm doing what I'm doing now and not that.
Why?
Well, you get up at 5:30 in the morning, you go into makeup at 6 o'clock in a place with no windows, put on the makeup, go to the set, work in a place with no windows and no phone that, you know, I mean, there's a phone, but you can't spend all day on the phone like I do, talking to people who are doing incredibly interesting and important work. You do some scenes with the effect that you're probably going to make some people laugh down the line. You don't choose the people that you're with. They're people who were cast, and they're nice enough, but, you know, they're not necessarily political or anything. You're exhausted. You go home. You sleep. You get up, and you start over. It's essentially meaningless. From the activist point of view. You know, I mean, I think Candace Bergen is doing a great job of bringing a feminist character to the, you know, to America. Designing Women does a great job in bringing up the issues and the shows they do. I think it's real important work. But I think the most that activist actresses and actors do really is to recognize that it's their responsibility to use their celebrity in order to anoint a cause and just show up. But you don't find any of them being the theorists or strategists for the movement, etc. They're essentially their celebrity. They show up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's not enough for me anymore.
Sheila James Kuehl, recruited in 1992. She played Zelda on the Dobie Gillis Show. Last November, she became the first openly gay person to be elected to the California State Assembly. More.